Blog Talk Radio.
In the desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me today. There are many protests and uprisings going on as I speak right now in Tehran, Iran, and all across Iran as the Iranian freedom fighters are once again rising up in absolute disgust, frustration, and dismay at this cruel dictatorship regime. And so it is spreading this morning. Western liberals, U.S. Democrats, and their MSN can't stop the freedom-loving Iranians from their efforts in overthrowing the occupying Islamic regime in Iran. Twitter is ablaze with lots of tweets. As you know, Telegram has been shut down in Iran, but yet there are videos making their way out to Freedom Messenger, and some of my Facebook friends, my Iranian Facebook friends, are posting these videos. I'm putting them up on my page. The downfall of this regime is coming. It's unpreventable. And Iranians say very clearly, no matter how much you try to boycott us, we will win at the end, and you will be the loser. Now people of Tehran are chanting Palestine, Syria are reasons of our misery. And they're doing these chantings during protests in front of the regime's parliament in Tehran. There are also lots of boycotts and strikes going on. You know about the nationwide truck strike. Well, there are shopkeepers at Tehran's Grand Bazaar, that huge shopping arena in Tehran, and it's now spread to all of the bazaars in Tehran. There is a massive strike of shopkeepers, which will hit at the heart of Iran's economic control by the government, and they are doing all they can to boycott so that the government doesn't get any money. Iran's Islamic regime police attacked protesters in Tehran's Grand Bazaar. Protesters are resisting these attacks and calling disgraced. in Safalar Street. Iranian protesters are chanting, "No to Gaza, no to Lebanon, my life only for Iran." Once again, they're reacting to the funnel of money and the efforts of the Iranian regime to do nothing but prop up terrorists all over the world, in Syria, and they're funneling their money to Hezbollah and other groups like Hamas to do nothing but take the money that the Iranian people need and funnel it with their tentacles of terrorism all over the world. And that's why the protesters, who are not just protesting economic woes, they're protesting this dictatorship government, make no mistake. They keep saying no to Gaza, no to Lebanon, my life only for Iran. Now, the anti-riot forces of the Iran's Revolutionary Guard are ready to attack the protesters in Tehran, and that's near Ferdowsi Square. Iran's Islamic regime security forces really don't have enough troops to suppress all the protests across Tehran. After protests in Tehran's Grand Bazaar city center and around the parliament area, now the shopkeepers in north of Tehran have started protesting. So it is spreading. It is becoming huge. The Iranian people who will not give up. It's been 9 years since the bogus re-election of Ahmadinejad back in June of 2009, and make no mistake, Iranians don't forget those events. That's when their dear icon friend, I call her, Neda Sultan, was gunned down in an alleyway. The video of her being shot in the chest by a Basiji was seen all over the world by millions of people. They don't forget the history of oppression. They are rising up. They've been kind of submerged during the winter. Back in February, they kind of went underground for a little while, but now they're up alive and rising up again. And let's keep these protesters in our thoughts and prayers as they fight valiantly against this horrible, oppressive dictatorship regime. What has also been in the news in Iran has been executions, which continue to rise up day after day. The death machine of the Iranian regime does all they can to put to silence anyone who dares to speak out or disagree with the government. The latest victim, of course, was Mohammad Salas, and he was a bus driver accused of running down some security forces back in February, and he did not do it. He wasn't guilty of it. But once again, because all the things that have been happening since President Trump pulled out of the nuclear agreement, the frustration, the economic woes, so the regime is going to do everything they can to blame something or someone for their problems, and they picked on this bus driver who declared he had nothing to do with this incident, and yet they executed him last week. The latest person that is on death row is Iranian Kurdish dissident, and his name is Amjad Hussein Panahi. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about him. I'm going to talk to you about an article from VOA News in Iran, and I want you to get acquainted with who this is and why he's on death row. A brother of an Iranian Kurdish man sentenced to death for belonging to a Kurdish nationalist group says the dissident has told a lawyer that he has hours to live after being transferred back to death row. Speaking exclusively to VOA Persian on Thursday, Amjad Hussein Panahi said his detained brother, Ramin Hussein Panahi, was moved to death row at a prison in the northwestern city of Sadege in the past day. Amjad Panahi, the brother of Ramin, who is based in Germany, said Ramin met with defense lawyer Hussein Amadaniz on Thursday and told the lawyer that he expected to be executed within hours. Amjad Panahi said he learned of the meeting from Amadaniz, who he said described it as the final one with Ramin. Amjad Panahi said prison authorities told family members in Sandige that they intended to execute Ramin ahead of the first anniversary of his arrest on June 23rd, 2017. So today's the 25th, and so far no news of an execution. VOA Persian could not identify or independently verify this message. Amjad Panahi also posted a video in his Twitter account last Thursday showing his parents speaking at their home and expressing despair about Ramin's plight. Now, in the video, verified by VOA Persian, the father said Iranian authorities recently took him to an unknown location and pressured him to make critical comments about his son Ramin as part of a video recording. In the Twitter video, the father, who suffers from Alzheimer's disease, said he did not mean to malign his son. "I'm old and miserable and did not understand what was going on," he said. "We are waiting for our son. Please help us." There was no immediate sign on the internet of the purported second video that the father said the authorities had filmed. Residents of Sandije sent Voice of American Persian images showing a heavier than usual security presence in the streets on last Wednesday and Thursday. Authorities at the city's prison granted Ramin Panahi a reprieve from execution last month, taking him off death row after Iranian and international rights activists intensified a social media campaign for annulling his death sentence. But many of the activists said they feared Iran was delaying an execution until after the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, which ended last week. Now, Ramin was arrested last year. He belonged to the Kurdish nationalist group Komala, and he was allegedly drawing a weapon against Iran's security forces who were carrying out a raid in the regions. And because of that, he was sentenced to death by a revolutionary court in January. He has never received a fair trial. He has been mistreated and tortured in detention. There are pictures of Ramin on my page. Please join me in continuing to intensify the pressure as human rights activists to demand his release and to stop his execution. We as human rights activists have a voice. It is a strong voice. And when you join with our voice and you pray with us, the pressure is on. Now, right now, with all that's happening with the uprisings in Iran, there may yet be another delay which would help out Ramin's situation. Please continue to speak out and pray for him. Some other news in Iran. You know about the World Cup frenzy, and Iranians love their football. And you know, for the last 39 more years, Iranian women have been banned from joining men in stadiums to watch World Cup. Well, there was a slight temporary reprieval last Wednesday after the government finally relaxed its ban on women at sporting events. Women and families were allowed into a Zidi stadium to watch a big screen broadcast of the nation's second World Cup match after the tournament had become a flashpoint for the controversial ban. So there is a little bit of leverage that the government allowed women in. They weren't able to see the first match against Morocco, but they did see the match against Spain. Now, it was a frenzy because when the women and families came, they were told, well, it's been canceled. And so there was a sit-in protest, and their fans would said they would not leave until they were let in. Fans were eventually let in an hour before the match after a special order by the safety of fans and families. Women have not allowed to be in stadium with men in sporting venues since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, and governments refuse to give in to the conservatives. But there was a reprieve for this past Wednesday, which I guess you can say it's good in one sense, but remember, the real focus Iranians should be having, as much as they love World Cup, they should be focusing on regime change more than anything else. But let's face it, they have to have some fun. They have to have a little bit of relaxation living under such extreme circumstances and under a dictatorship regime. Now, with what's going on with the uprising, a lot of video is not getting out via Telegram, because in Iran, Telegram bans strangle the country and they shut down the economics and the protests. Now, the disruption to millions of people's daily lives in Iran, caused by the Iranian judiciary's blocking in the popular Telegram, is costing them jobs and incomes and fueling discontent in Iran at a time when unrest and grievance against the state are already at a high point. Now, I want you to hear this special report by a very strong group, the Center for Human Rights in Iran. And they released a 40-page report talking about the banning of Telegram in Iran. So I just spoke to you about the ban on women being temporarily lifted, right? But this will not be lifted. They don't want the Western world to know what's going on in Iran, yet some videos are still going out. But Telegram has billions of users. Now, in a new 40-page report by the Center for Human Rights in Iran, Closing of the Gates, Implications of Iran's Ban on the Telegram Message App, dozens of Iranians across the political spectrum discuss the costs of the ban on the messaging app that has some 40 million active users in Iran and is used in all walks of life. The states face off with more than 40 million users of Telegram in Iran, regardless of the discontent created by the move, shows the Iranian leaders' deep fear of the free flow of information and their reckless pursuit of censorship at any cost, according to Hadi Gami, the executive director. The ban is unprecedented in its scope and impact, as Iranians use Telegram for everything from personal communications to healthcare, education, and business. By 2018, it had become the principal mean by which Iranians access the internet. They use it more than Facebook. The report examines the ban in the context of the state's massive decade-long investment in the country's national internet infrastructure, which has been designed to restrict Iranians to a digital world controlled and censored by the authorities. The report reveals the strong state consensus behind this goal, despite public statements by the Rouhani administration. It also discusses the full implications of the ban for Iranians' digital rights and their social and economic right. The state is hitting the economy at a time when the economy cannot take a hit, said Gahami. The Telegram ban shows that control and censorship are more important to the authorities than jobs and the well-being of the Iranian people. Now, what are the key findings in this report that reveals the implications of Iran's ban on the Telegram messaging app? I can tell you I have friends that use this app I haven't heard from in months because of this ban. But what is the result of this ban? What implications? Number one, the ban blocks the principal way Iranians access the internet in an attempt to cut them off from any information or communication not controlled and censored by the state, demonstrates the growing political irrelevance of President Rouhani, who publicly opposed the ban but took no effective action against it. Many Iranians will continue to access the app through circumstantial tools, but those who do not have the resources or know-how for these tools will lose access. There is a way, kind of an anti-filter way of doing it, like with Facebook, but not every Iranian has those tools. Those switching to domestic messaging apps will be using platforms that only deliver state-approved content and allow state surveillance of personal accounts. Now, the judicial ban indicates the growing centralization of power over internet policy in Iran's most hardline state bodies. The ban will directly erode people's economic and social rights. Telegram has become deeply integrated into the daily business of the country, and its ban will impact employment and incomes. Financial losses from the ban will come at a time when the economy is already under strain due to mismanagement, sanctions, low investment, and the withdrawal of the United States from the Iranian nuclear deal. More unrest could trigger a severe crackdown and further erosion of civil and political liberties. Well, you see that right now as I'm speaking to you about this report on Telegram. Look at the unrest occurring right now in Iran because of the ban. This app and the banning of it is a huge step curbing people's online freedom. The international community should speak out forcefully in defense of Iranians' internet freedom and basic rights. And so you can understand from what I'm reporting to you this morning the desperate plight of these people. When you shut down their access and right to the social media, when you cause more economic deep problems because of the ban, in many ways, the Iranian regime are on a suicide mission, and they're going to do themselves in. They're going to crumble and fall within because of their lust for power, because of their absolute lust for complete control. They are killing themselves from within. And with the uprisings, the truck strikes, the shopkeeper strikes, with the economy and the sanctions weakening this regime, it cannot last much longer. It is going to fall from within, and democracy will begin to take root in this troubled, troubled nation. This is what I continually pray every day for my Iranian friends, the collapse of this dictatorship regime. And you've seen it since December of last year when you had the women of Revolution Street standing up in protest with their sticks, waving their hijabs high in the air. You saw the protests begin to take shape then. The uprisings continued for a couple of months, then they weaned and they calmed down, and they're back again on the streets. They are frustrated, despaired. They are desperate for a new life. They are not just protesting the economic problems. They are protesting this brutal dictatorship regime. You can hear them chant, "Death to the dictator." There were more than 5,000 arrests back in February. The overcrowding of the jails and prisons cannot take much more. This is a cup of wrath about to explode in Iran. And what I'm asking you as faithful listeners is to join me in speaking out and praying, supporting the Iranian people, never relenting. Let them know we support them, we pray for them, that we speak out for them. This is a regime that sooner or later, and I wish I knew when, will collapse from within because of their lust of power and control and censorship. They cannot sustain these uprisings, and our great God will win in the end. I want to take just a couple of minutes now to read to you the newest article by my dear Iranian refugee friend. Her name is Nanush, and she lives in Sweden. She is committed to the human rights of her people and her family back in Iran. Nanush is busy working in a job, and she is living with a very prominent family there that can help her with her immigration situation. She was doing very, very well, and she keeps her heart and mind focused on her people back in Iran. And just recently, she sent me an article about a practice that goes on in Iran. It's been going on for a very long time, and it's called piggybacking. It is such a cruel job to see these young and old men carrying heavy products on their back like a giant knapsack in order to gain what little money they can in the horrible economic conditions in Iran. I want to take the time to read this to you and to give you a visual of what the average person in all different parts of Iran go through on a daily basis to keep themselves economically alive. Now, just keep in mind something as I read this. A couple of years ago, President Obama funneled $150 billion to the Iranian government through this nuclear deal and the removal of sanctions. And what did the Iranian government do with all of this money? Well, certainly they gave it to the people, right? Of course not. They used it to continue to funnel their terrorism. And it's because of this that the people are desperate and are crying out. And as I read this article about the economic woes in Iran, I want you to think about these people in a deep way and what they suffer with every day. This is Mnuchin's latest article entitled "The Cruel Task of Piggybacking in Iran." Life in the west of Iran, which is tied to extreme poverty, calamity, and bitter stories of the fate of the people trapped by a brutal, cruel regime, makes one wonder why a nation's welfare back in the Pahlavi regime contributed to jobs like piggybacking. Sometimes the stories released from the piggybacker in Iran are so tragic that one may hardly believe a human being undergone such an extreme amount of pain and agony. Every day we hear governments, border officers murder one or two of these piggybackers throughout western border towns in Iran. These people are neither a trafficker nor a thief. They are only some poor, simple individuals tied up by a cruel, corrupted regime who are obliged to carry very heavy stuff on their back and get them to the other side of the borderline on foot. The income is so insignificant that can barely meet their daily needs. It is noteworthy that on their way to the other side, they face several dangers, like the government's border guards shooting them, falling off the high rocks of the area, and stepping on the mines from Iran-Iraq war period that have not yet within border towns of Iran. It has been reported that several piggybackers have lost their limbs walking over these mines. Interestingly enough, among these carriers, there have been some educated young people and intellectual pioneers who have accepted to do such a job out of a desperate need of employment. One of these young people is Bajer Ahmadi. He has a master's degree in math and also holds the highest rank in PhD entrance university examination. Yet he is one of the million young Kurdish people who sign up for such jobs due to the difficulties of life. Another tragic example of the piggybackers is the story about Kizar. He is an old man with a daily income of about $10 to $15, according to our money. Although suffering from a heart attack, he is the breadwinner of an 8-member family. Every day, he has to carry heavy goods uphill with the help of his cane to Iraqi Kurdistan in order to make ends meet. These are only parts of the suffering in piggybackers' lives, who are obliged to carry very heavy stuff on their backs and reach their destination on foot. However, suffering may not suffice to describe their situation trapped by such a cruel regime. To the suffering people of Israel that were oppressed and burdened by the twisted version of God's law heaped upon them by the Pharisees and scribes, Jesus reached out to them in love and compassion, calling them to find their rest in Him. I think this verse that Jesus spoke of, that Jesus said to the oppressed Israeli people, certainly applies to the piggybackers, with their heavy burdens being carried on their backs. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." If you go to my Facebook page and scroll down, you click on this article, you will see the picture of an older man carrying what looks like mattresses on his back and other clothing and other items. And it's heartbreaking when you see these people suffering under an oppressive dictatorship regime. I pray that you will remember these people in your prayers daily for the suffering they go through under a dictatorship regime. I want to take a few minutes of a break right now. I want to play a song by a very gifted Christian artist from many years ago who has an incredible voice and an incredible message in this song. For those of us who are struggling in our faith because of circumstances, because of trials and tribulations, knowing this, that God can take our trials and turn them to gold, Let's not give up and become weary. Let's continue to believe. This is Russ Taff, and I still believe. Worship and Christian music of Russ Taff, and I still believe from many, many years ago. There are so many great songs by this gifted artist who sang with the Imperials back in the early 80s, 1980s. He's been around for a very long time, but he's a tremendous artist. We've come to that part of the program. It is the Bible teaching segment of The Cross in the Desert. When I first began this program with the title The Cross in the Desert, it had a specific imagery that I wanted to convey to my audience, that although I'm talking about Iran and other countries and human rights and taking a stand for human rights, I'm also talking about the most important aspect of this program, and that is the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. I love to paint with words. I want the readers of my books to feel and taste what I write. I want to draw my readers into another world where they can explore and imagine with all of their senses. Now, that's why I call this program The Cross in the Desert. Imagine this, the image of a dry, hot, treacherous desert with sweltering, unbearable heat. In the perfect way, I use this imagery to introduce the cool and refreshing rivers of living waters for the desperate traveler who is dying of thirst. And so I want to paint an image with this program, and it comes from Psalm 63. Oh God, you are my God, I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land where there is no water. So there's a reason for the title of my program, The Cross in the Desert. The imagery of this psalm introduces the weary traveler, whoever you may be, who is longing for the presence of God. The traveler is desperately searching, zealously desiring to reconnect with his God. He realizes that his life is empty without the presence of God. The traveler is suffering from despair and crying out with his whole being for relief. You and I can really relate to a desperate condition like that, I'm sure. I chose this name for the blogs and my radio program to paint a picture, to entice and draw you, the listener or the reader, out of your mundane existence and give you a longing for finding purpose and fulfillment in life. Sometimes our life seems meaningless and empty without purpose. We feel like we are trapped in the scorching heat of a desert, thirsting and longing for a new beginning. In the midst of our desperation, the God of the Bible reaches down and offers you and me relief and refreshment. He pours out his irresistible love and rejuvenates our souls. He takes us from the barren, scorching heat of the dry and treacherous desert and rejuvenates us with the streams of living water. I am the bread of life, Jesus says. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. John chapter 6, verse 35. Anyone who is thirsty may come to me. Anyone who believes in me may come and drink. For the scriptures declare rivers of living water will flow from his heart. John 7, 38. The Spirit and the bride say, come. Let anyone who hears this say, come. Let anyone who is thirsty come. Let anyone who desires drink freely from the water of life. Revelation chapter 22, verse 17. Jesus promises to quench our spiritual thirst. He offers himself in all of his splendor, glory, love and compassion. Our longings are satisfied by his irresistible love. When we plunge into the rivers of his love, we are healed, we are forgiven, and all of our guilt and shame is washed away forever. Jesus truly is the cross in the desert, a reservoir of living hope. That's why I chose this name. No matter who you are, you are here by God's design, yet it's an invitation. You're here because you are searching. You're longing for that living water because your life is empty and despaired like a scorched, dry desert. I want to talk to you today about Jesus from one of the most important Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This Gospel is full of drama and action, and it records the miraculous powers of Jesus healing the sick, raising the dead, his power and authority over the spirit world of the demonic. And I want you to listen to this incredible story of Jesus healing a demon-possessed man. I chose it because there are people in hopeless situations who believe God is a far-off, distant deity who has no desire to do anything in their lives. But that is absolutely not the case when you come to the Bible and you see what Jesus did during his earthly ministry and still does today. I want you to listen carefully to Mark as he tells this story in his gospel of one person who was desperate and hopeless and was touched by the miraculous power of our Lord and Savior. Mark chapter 5. So they arrived at the other side of the lake, in the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus climbed out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the burial caves and could no longer be restrained, even with a chain. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrists and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night he wandered among the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. When Jesus was still some distance away, the man saw him, ran to meet him, and bowed low before him. With a shriek, he screamed, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had already said to the spirit, "Come out of the man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus demanded, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, because there are many of us inside this man." Then the evil spirits begged him again and again not to send them to some distant place. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. "Send us into those pigs," the spirits begged. "Let us enter them." So Jesus gave them permission. The evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd of about 2,000 pigs plunged down the deep, steep hillside into the lake and drowned in the water. The herdsmen fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons. He was sitting there fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what happened told the others about the demon-possessed man and the pigs, and the crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. But Jesus said, "No, go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been." So the man started off to visit the 10 towns of that region and began to proclaim the great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. This is an amazing story in Mark's gospel, which is a gospel that chronicles Jesus, the Son of God, going from village and city, performing miracles, giving signs to the people of his time that he indeed is the Messiah, that he is the promised deliverer. These miraculous signs were done out of compassion, but also as a way to testify of his deity and that he was sent from God. In many ways, we need to be careful when we think of miracles today, that we're careful to understand the purpose for miracles. While Jesus certainly did miracles out of compassion, and miracles still do happen today, we need to understand that the purpose for these miracles was to attest to the deity of Christ and Jesus as being the Messiah coming in the flesh. There was a purpose for those miracles. But setting that aside, I want you to hear this story in your mind's eye. I want you to picture a man who had been given up, who had lost all hope. To the people that took care of him, they knew that he was possessed by evil spirits, but they had no way of bringing relief to this man. And so the best they could do was to chain him. And it's interesting that this man spent his time in the graveyards. And he would take the chains. He was so strong and so possessed, he would break the chains asunder. And it didn't say that he attacked necessarily anyone else, but that because of his possession, he inflicted pain and punishment on himself. He wandered among the burial caves, howling, and it says cutting himself with sharp stones. You know, you hear once in a while of the practice of cutting today by young people, men and women, who have lost all hope and are filled with despair, and they begin a practice of cutting on their body, their wrists, their arms. Many of them are suicidal. Many of them are so depressed and are given over to bipolar disorders. But we see this man here in Mark's gospel who is ravaged by evil spirits, and he's wandering among burial caves. He's cutting himself. Now, we need to be careful with this story that we don't assume that every person today who is depressed, who has some type of bipolar disorder, or even cuts themselves, is necessarily possessed by evil spirits. We would be making a wrong assumption to attribute that in every case. But in this particular case here, this man is indeed possessed by several legions of demons. Notice, I love this. Notice how Jesus handles these spiritual entities. You know, today you see all of these charlatans, I call them, so-called deliverance experts shouting and arguing with demons. And in many cases, the people aren't possessed. They just have some psychological disorder. But these charlatans today will yell and scream at demons. Well, notice that Jesus did not engage in that whatsoever. So if these people today are truly sent by God, they're certainly going about it the wrong way. Jesus simply said, "Come out of him, you evil spirit." You know why he could say it in that way? Because Jesus is Lord. He is God of the universe, and evil spirits must bow to his lordship. They have no choice. There is no way they can argue. There is no way that they can resist, because in the end, a simple command from the lips of Jesus drives them out. And notice that they begged to be once again possessed into pigs. And notice what happened to these herd of pigs once these spirits entered into them. They basically drowned themselves in a lake. We can see this oppression leads to suicide and to unimaginable strength. This is a man who has been given up by his society as hopeless. He is put in a cemetery. He is restrained. He cuts himself. He yells day and night, howling. I'm sure you can think of someone right now who feels hopeless in life, who feels that life has nothing but hardship and sorrow to offer them. And these individuals become reclusive. They step away from their friendships and they go into hiding. And some of them cut themselves and kill themselves because they have lost every bit of hope that they have. But Jesus, in his irresistible love, never fails to find that hopeless person. It says in the story, no one told him to go to this man. He simply went to him on his own. Jesus is the God of hope who searches and seeks out the hopeless people of the world who are tormented with anxiety, tormented with despair and hopelessness. They have tried everything in their life to bring relief, and yet they are bound in a spirit of suicide and hopelessness. And Jesus seeks and finds them wherever they're at. This man wants the command from the Lord of the universe to him is let him go and come out of him. It says that when the villagers and the townspeople saw him, they saw him sitting fully clothed, perfectly sane. And they could not comprehend that. It says they were afraid. You see, this man was naked, cutting himself, snapping chains. And when they saw him again, this same man, it says he was fully clothed. He was perfectly sane. When Jesus comes to the man or woman filled with despair, he restores them. He restores their sanity. They once again are a person that can see reality in the way that God intends them to see it. They are fully clothed, it says, and perfectly sane. Because when Jesus arrives on the scene, he restores. He drives out the darkness of our despairs. He removes the shackles and chain of the bondage we have to our sin. He snaps those chains. He opens the prison doors. He chases away the darkness with his perfect Shekinah glory and his light. You see, darkness has to flee from the light of God, from the glory of God, from the holiness of God. All darkness must flee and is chased away when God's light appears and bursts on the scene to destroy every demonic entity that has been sent to bring hopelessness and despair. So this man could be sitting up fully clothed and perfectly sane. And he is a man of gratitude. He wants to come with Jesus. He wants to be with Jesus. His Jesus has healed him. He has restored him. And Jesus says, no, I did this so that you can tell your family and every person of what the Lord has done for you. He made this man into a powerful disciple who was once possessed and chained, and now he's set free to tell others of the great miraculous power of Jesus. And it says this man started off to visit the 10 towns. There was many towns in that region. And he began to proclaim the great things that Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. And so here's a man of great gratitude and thankfulness to be set free. And he wants to be close to the person who set him free. And instead, the Lord of the universe gives him a monumental task. Go and tell others of the great things that the Lord has done. Jesus seeks out and finds us in our hopelessness and despair. He finds us in our brokenness. He finds us in the darkest corner of the planet. No matter where we're at, the God of the universe, the irresistible God of love, seeks and finds us And when he comes into our darkness and despair, he illuminates our life with his light of truth. He restores the brokenness of our soul. He cleanses, he forgives, and he puts in us a new heart and a new spirit to love him, to serve him. This man's life was absolutely transformed by Jesus. And he became a mighty witness of the great things that God had done for him. You might be someone today that's perhaps not as severe as this demon-possessed man. You may not be bound by chains. You may not be in a tomb or a graveyard. And you may not be cutting yourself. But you still have a sense of darkness and despair that has strangleholded your life. And you feel like you're in a prison that you can't break free of. If that is you today, and you know what I'm saying is true, you've heard what Jesus does for these people. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is the God that does not change. He can meet you in your hopelessness and despair. And just like the demon-possessed man, he has come to break the shackles of depression and sin over your life. He is the God of truth that has come to set you free. And if you want that freedom, if you want that deliverance, you simply cry out, Jesus, come and set me free. Jesus, come and free me from these chains. Jesus, come and forgive me. And when you cry out to the God of truth, Jesus, you will be freed. You will be set free from whatever addiction or darkness that has a hold of you. Jesus has come, the Bible says, to set the captives free, to open the prison doors, because he is the God of truth, the God of compassion, and he loves people. If that is you today, simply cry out to him. He will come to you in your despair and your darkness. He will come to you in the graveyards, if that's where you're at. He will break the chains and set you free. That is who Jesus is. That is what he does, because he is the God of irresistible love. Please join me in remembering the Iranian plight. Please continue to pray and speak out for them as they stand up desperately trying to break free from their chains of bondage from this dictatorship government. Please remember them in your prayers this week. Please continue to speak out and pray for Ramin Panahi, who is on death row. Our God hears our cries. God bless you. I will see you next Monday on the Cross in the Desert.
Glory, glory.